Hey everyone, welcome to Marvel Champions Monthly, a podcast where we discuss Marvel Champions, the card game by Fantasy Flight Games. Today we have two very special guests with us, the game designers for the game we know and love, Michael Boggs and Caleb Grace. So hi Michael, hi Caleb, how's it going?
Hey, good, how are you doing?
Pretty good. This is Kennedy Hawk, one of the hosts for Marvel Champions Monthly, and I think we have Lester with us.
Yeah, I'm hanging out as well. I'm just on a hillside watching goats, so there might be some wind. There might be some wind problems with my audio.
Yeah, so today we're going to chat about Marvel Champions, the card game. Our third host, Crimson, might join us here shortly. It looks like he just hopped in. How's it going, Crimson?
How's it going, guys?
Good. Hey.
So we're stoked to get this interview underway. We have lots of questions, but limited time. So we have some listener questions, and we kind of have a list of questions we're going to go through. We might skip over some just for time's sake. But we'll get started just getting to know you guys. So can you tell us about yourselves and your history in the game industry?
Oh, I have to go first?
I'm making you go first.
Well, probably because I have the shortest history in the game industry. So I'm Caleb Grace, and I've been working at Fantasy Flight for 8 years now, and I've been on the Lord of the Rings LCG for that whole time. It's pretty crazy. So I'm really excited to be working on something new, something that's special to me. The way Lord of the Rings is, Marvel is something I've been a fan of since like 1991 with Jim Lee's Colossal X-Men number one. So big comic book fan, big game fan, just happy to be on the project.
Yeah, I'm Michael Boggs. I worked as an independent developer for a long time before I was hired at Fantasy Flight. Been here almost 3 years now. Worked on Netrunner, then I moved to Destiny, and now I am on Marvel Champions, and it's been pretty exciting. Always been a fan of Marvel, always loved Spider-Man specifically, so it's pretty cool to be able to work on a game with, you know, the passion that I've had for this IP for so long.
Pretty rich card game history there. You kind of told us your history with Marvel, and we've seen that in some of the live streams by FFG. So do you have a favorite hero or villain that's not in the game currently?
Yeah, like all my favorites are X-Men, just because those are the characters that brought me into the comics. I'm a huge Cyclops fan, the leader of the X-Men. I always really liked him more in the comics than like in the show. He's a little bit of a Boy Scout in the cartoon, but in the comics, he's a really nuanced character. He's a lot of fun. And yeah, it would be a dream to get to work on that. That'd be really fun.
I think for me, a character we haven't seen yet in Marvel Champions is Venom. Growing up, I always loved like Black Suit Spider-Man and Venom. And, you know, I'm excited for, you know, whenever he comes around, because he's always been a character that he's a little dorky. He's a little silly, but I just like his silliness.
Oh, that's the same way with me. I grew up in the 90s playing Overpower and watching the cartoon of X-Men. Rogue and Gambit have always been my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Have you read the Mr. and Mrs. X book with Rogue and Gambit?
I have.
I just picked that up, and I just thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to read.
I'll try not to go on too many comic book tangents as we talk about them. I just get really excited, like, oh, that was a great book. I finally found it.
Yeah. He does.
That's true. Box enjoys my Marvel comic history stories.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot that I didn't know I didn't know.
So. It's like the Caleb Grace story hour.
Yeah. Yeah, it's encouraged here for sure.
Yeah, totally. I literally have my X-Men 25 framed on the wall over there, the one where Wolverine loses his antimantium. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a big deal when that storyline debuted. That was the Fatal Attractions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With the holographic Gambit card on it.
Yep. I remember that. I was collecting the monthlies at that time.
So as far as Marvel Champions goes, if you had to sell your Marvel Champions game in 1 to 2 minutes, like, say what stands out about it and what your favorite feature of the game is, how would you summarize that?
You get to play as a hero. I think that's the most important thing. You're not in control of a big team or collecting different characters. You are the hero that you want to play as. And not only that, but you are also that hero's alternate identity. So it's very immersive. That's what stands out to me. I like to brag on Boggs's contributions, because that was his original idea to make the identity double-sided. And be like, so we're not just Spider-Man, we're also Peter Parker. So that's what stands out for me.
Yeah, I think I feel exactly the same way. I think if I had to sell in 1 to 2 minutes, I'd say that It's a game about playing as your favorite heroes and their alter egos. It's a game about feeling very powerful and really living in these larger than life comic book moments.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing about the game too, is the alter ego villain flipping. So you really have this difficult decision you have to make every turn of, am I going to sit back as a civilian or be a hero at the end of the day? So what led to that design decision?
Well, I think we can get into a little bit of the design here. So, you know, peel back the curtain a little bit and share some stories. We actually reached a point with the game where we thought we had more or less a finished product. And so part of our internal process is, you know, for a big release like this, we're going to need to sit down and play it with the executives and get their feedback. So we've been working on it for quite a while. They had already approved the vision. They loved the pitch. And after some development time, we sat down to play with them. And it was a blast of cold water. That game session was like just watching all the excitement kind of just drain from their faces as they were like getting frustrated that they didn't feel powerful enough and that they were just kind of getting beat up by the villain. And it was a little tough in that moment to hear their feedback, but ultimately everything that they said was spot on. So we just kind of allowed the game to grow a little too much beyond our initial scope. And the feedback we got was like, trim it back down, get it back to like just its essence. And I think that is the point at which we really started to lean into this double-sided identity mechanic. And it really became about, this is your central choice. You are either going to be the hero directly interacting with the villain, or you're going to be alter ego and kind of retreating back. And I think, wasn't it at that time, Boggs, that it was like, that's when we decided it would determine the villain's behavior?
Yeah,
I believe so. I don't think, like, the whole idea of the villain would either attack or scheme, depending on what form you were in, I don't think that actually arrived in the game till after that meeting.
I believe so, yeah. It's hard to remember.
And that's so I remember when we settled on that, that's when I was, like, super pumped. Then I knew, like, this is great, and I think we have it now. So we kind of trimmed out everything else and really made it about that. This idea of, you know, it's this really personal conflict between you and the villain, you know, and that so that they're reacting to what you're doing. It created the sense of AI for the villains that I really like. I don't even know if I answered your question there. Sorry, I got on a tangent like I do.
I think that's a good point, though, like accepting feedback from like editors in the writing world or whatever. Mm-hmm. It really like breaks down your ideas because you might think you have something super solid, but it's really good to get feedback from other minds. Mm-hmm. The thing that most excites me about the game is probably has to do with what your executives are saying, is the fact that you do feel really powerful. That's at least what I get from, like, Team Covenant was talking about it, and they said when they first played it, you really feel like a very powerful hero when you are taking those turns as the hero.
Cool.
Yeah. I think that was in our original vision. Mm-hmm. We wanted the players to feel not only powerful, but empowered. We wanted them to feel like every single turn, every single round, they really had these interesting and fun and exciting moments that they could sort of lean into. And we really structured the game around that idea that mm-hmm. you are larger than life. You are a hero when you play.
So this game is truly unlike any of the other LCGs Fantasy Flight has put out before. So can you give us some insights into how this is different from the other LCGs, maybe the co-ops in particular, and anything you learned developing other games, how it influenced this one?
Yeah, I can say that transitioning from Lord of the Rings to Marvel is exciting and challenging at the same time, because they are, while they're both co-op and they both have heavy theme and story elements, Lord of the Rings, by nature, is designed to be very challenging, very much like your back is up against the wall. It's your darkest hour. How are we ever going to survive? And then Marvel is meant to be, like Boggs said, very much like, watch me just swing in and save the day as Spidey. So every now and then I find myself kind of slipping back into old habits, maybe making the game a little harder than I should. And then I have to get that feedback from someone else who's just coming along going, wow, that dude really kicked my butt. Like, can we tone it down a little, maybe? I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, for me, this was my first foray into a cooperative game in the past. I'd only worked on competitive games, and I always loved competitive games. Cooperative games were, I didn't dislike them, but I had never really played a cooperative game that had really captured my attention. I think actually Arkham Horror, the card game, was the first one I played, and I was like, oh yeah, I really enjoy this. I feel like I have a lot of agency here. And I didn't always feel like that in the past with other cooperative games. So when we were putting together Marvel, that was something that I really wanted to come forward, that same type of feeling that I had, you know, with Arkham Horror, in that every single turn was interesting and compelling. And I felt like my contribution was just as valuable as the, you know, the other person's contribution across the table. A lot of the lessons that I had learned in previous games and stuff that I had worked on, I really tried to apply those to Marvel. And I think everybody at the team really kind of tried to take the years of experience that they had and invested in into the product as best we could to make it just a very streamlined and just very easy to get into game that just made you feel like, you know, you're doing some really cool things.
Mm-hmm. That's also one of the things I really love about this. As a player who plays a lot of the Lord of the Rings Online, LCG, and a lot of Arkham, this game feels very different, but it feels like an evolution from those other games. You know, Lord of the Rings is straight up hard, press, you know, trying to press through it. Arkham's great because you have that XP path to follow through multiple campaigns, and this one feels great because you do have some hardness with the expert modes, but you have that feeling of accomplishment in most of your turns.
Good.
Yeah, and the most appealing thing about the game for me is that it is cooperative, and you can also play it solo, but I've always loved the cooperative games. I was a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and I'm really looking forward to how this one plays out.
Cool. Thank you.
So continuing on about design, this game really has a sort of modular design philosophy. When you pick your hero, you get the signature cards with them, and then you pick one aspect that gets you another pool of cards. We've seen that a lot before in other FFG games, like the Star Wars game had the pod-based building, and Conquest, you kind of picked a main character that came with some cards. What made you guys want to continue this modular building for the heroes instead of just the villains like previous co-ops?
I think a lot of that came down to, I think it was really two different things. Specifically for heroes, we wanted to define each hero's play style. And we realized early on that you can't really do that with just one hero card. So we decided to sort of make these kits that were based around this hero's play styles to really make them feel like a character. And everything else just sort of fell into place from there. But secondly, I think this game is very much directed at people who are not necessarily the most hardcore players. We wanted to keep this game very broad, very open. We wanted anyone to be able to jump into the game. And part of that process for us was, you know, finding the hero system where it's like, oh, they've already got these cards, and that just makes this deck building process so much easier. So I think once we realized that those two things kind of worked in tandem, we just leaned into it and really made that process of, you know, just selecting your kit and then being able to throw in other cards into your deck. It streamlines the process for a lot of people while also keeping things very thematic. And from what I remember, that just sort of rolled over into the encounter sets later. Like the first set we ever designed was Rhino, and we designed some side cards that could be shuffled in. And we were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you could customize Rhino and have him play different ways? It allows for a lot of replayability and a lot of variety and stuff. And I think just everything just felt natural and fluid, and we just kind of ran with it.
Yeah, I remember Nate really pushed for the modular encounter side.
Yeah.
Like as a team, we all landed very early on the idea of heroes will have kits. And then especially out of the core, deck building will be really streamlined.
Yeah.
And of course, with that, with the player deck building, though, you can still do a lot of customization once your collection grows, and you can pick and choose how many copies you want of each card. If you want to, you can. If you're not into deck building at all, you won't really ever have to. But on the encounter side, Nate was like, we should really just make it a thing where you can customize your experience on the villains too. And I'm really encouraged by how well that's resonated. People seem to really like oh, I'm going to take this set out, put this one in and see how it plays now. So I think replayability was a big thing we're going for there.
And as a person who plays a lot of card games, I love the modular deck building, especially the one from Star Wars. I love deck building in this game. I don't know what it is about that pod-based deck building, but it is incredibly enjoyable to build decks in.
Cool. Yeah, I think maybe you could call it an evolution of the pod building idea, because it's not as strict, right? Like when you choose, say, the aggression aspect, out of the core, it's almost like a pod. But once your collection starts to grow, then you're not locked into the same aggression cards every time. You can start to customize that if you want to. So I kind of look at it like the best of all worlds. Like for people who don't want to do a lot of deck building, it's very easy to just put something together. And then for people who really do like a lot of deck building, there'll be more and more opportunities to do that as your collection grows.
Heroes certainly feel less pigeonholed because you're not tied to one aspect of the hero. Like in Lord of the Rings, one hero from a sphere creates resources for that sphere and things like that.
Yeah.
And the villain modular stuff is really interesting compared to the other co-ops. That's one of the things when you play a Lord of the Rings quest over and over again, eventually you know the cards that are cycled in. But now if I pick a random module, it could be a random setup every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the replayability seems super deep right out of the core. And then you're going to have two scenario packs within the first 4 months that, as far as I understand it, there's going to be multiple modular encounter sets in each of those. So the ability to create your own experience seems pretty vast, right off the hop.
Yeah, Boggs, didn't you put in like in the Green Goblin? Isn't there like an encounter set in there that's just full of like goblin gliders and pumpkin bombs?
We'll have to see. I when I was developing Green Goblin, I definitely wanted to live the dream of playing against Rhino and having him on.
Yeah, that's all. Like that was, we didn't even care if Green Goblin turned out that great. We really just wanted Rhino on the Goblin Glider.
That was definitely one of the things that I wanted.
It's amazing that Marvel hasn't put that in the comics yet.
Maybe it'll spark a new comic book.
They've done crazier things.
So previous LCGs have always been released in like packs of six or cycles, but we kind of don't have to do that with this setup. So when you're designing new packs, are you designing them like as a big group of packs, or are you focused on one pack at a time, hashing out what's going to come in this hero pack or this villain pack?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's definitely something that's different about this line. Is we are not developing like a whole cycle of cards and then parsing them out into the different packs. Like the packs that are released near each other will obviously have some crossover. Like I think we spoiled the Captain America pack and Avengers Assemble. So obviously there's going to be some Avengers focus, you know, in the first few packs so that, you know, there will be some crossover. But ultimately, yeah, the vision for this game's release model is very different from our other LCGs, that you could just buy your favorite hero and have a playable deck right out of that pack and not feel like you're missing out on something.
Yeah, that seems like a really good way to get new players into the game, too. If you're playing a game at your local game store, you could get someone to just hop in, buy a hero pack with their favorite hero, and then come along for the ride.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant design decision.
I'm glad to hear it. I do feel like you could make a strong argument that every single one of our products is an entry point into the game.
Can you take us through the design of a card? There's so many knobs for you guys to turn between resource type and cost and what type of card, whether it's hero aspect or basic. Where do you start when you're designing a card? Cards like the Spider-Man's Web Kick, Uppercut, and Haymaker, they're all pay resources to do damage. But how do you balance cards like that?
Oh, I think a lot of it depends on the specific type of card we're trying to design. If we're designing a hero card, that's a little bit different of a process than if we're designing an aspect card, which is sometimes even different from designing a basic card. When we do a hero card, we're looking at what defines that hero, what makes their playstyle special, what makes, you know, them fun to play in a different way than another hero. When we're designing aspect cards, a lot of times we're looking at how the aspect cards sort of relate to the hero whose deck they'll be found in the pack. But we also talk about how those aspect cards kind of relate to the greater aspect cards in the pool. And then when we talk about basic cards, a lot of times it's, you know, what are some varied, versatile things that we want to give, you know, everybody access to, but that are not nearly as efficient as other things. So depending on the specific card and which group it's in, it's always kind of a different process. Specifically like Uppercut and Swinging Webkick, I believe they both have the same cost of 3, but Swinging Webkick deals 8 damage. It's a superior card by every metric. But when we were, you know, developing them, that just felt right in Spider-Man. It just felt like that's what that card should do. Whereas Uppercut, it gives everybody the ability to, you know, dish out some decent damage. Uppercut 3 for 5 is not bad at all, but it's not nearly as powerful as a hero-centric attack card. I think our process is usually just discussion and looking at how the cards are sort of related to everything else in each individual group that we're designing.
I think you touched on something else there too when you're talking about like the price comparison and everything. A big part of our design process when working on heroes specifically is that we're not just designing, you know, different cards, but they're all part of the set, right? Yeah, like that's
something the hero.
We're always talking about, like Boggs and I are always reminding each other of this, like, because you might look at a card like Swinging Webkick in Spider-Man's set and compare it to another hero's attack and say, well, how come Spider-Man's attack is better? They both cost 3. But that's kind of a false comparison because Swinging Webkick is part of a 15-card kit that's specific to Spider-Man, and every other hero has their kit. And so these comparisons are natural, but they're also kind of, you know, unbalanced. Right. So that's just something that we try to keep in mind, too. I think it came up like when you guys were talking about Miss Marvel and people were looking at, like, is it her what's her attack card? Is it Big Hands?
Yeah.
It's Big Hands. It costs 4 and deals 4 damage. Or I'm sorry, it costs 4, does it? 2.
It costs 2, right?
It costs 2. And
deals. Yeah. And people, I think some people are saying, well, that seems kind of compared to something like Swing Webkick, but believe me, when you play Miss Marvel and you draw Big Hands, you're like, oh, it's on.
It's all relative to the
game. Yeah. Like, she can dish out damage so consistently that it's amazing. Like, Spider-Man can play Swinging Webkick every once in a while and feel like a champ, but she's just dishing out that Big Hands every turn if you want to.
Yeah, and that's one of the things with Big Hands. Like, when I read it, I double it automatically because of her ability. I think 4, 4, 8 damage.
Yeah. And then also, you guys didn't spoil that other card, did you? That, like, boosts the attack or whatever? I don't believe we spoiled it. Oh, well, there might be something in her kit that, like, even makes it a little sexier.
We talked about it on stream a little.
Did
we
you?
Didn't say what.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe it might
be called a Biggin. It would be kind of remiss on our part to make a Miss Marvel hero that didn't have some kind of Imbiggin.
Yeah, I really like the interplay between Shrink and Sneak By too. I think that's really clever and funny.
Dude, whoever designed Miss Marvel, I love it. I love everything about Miss Marvel. Same thing with the She-Hulk. Those two characters are exactly my playstyle.
Yeah, boy.
Those are two of my favorite as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're just having fun with them. Like Marvel's such a rich universe, and all those. The thing about Marvel characters that I always liked over other comic book companies, we don't disparage people, so I won't say who, but I always liked Marvel characters the best because I always felt like really three-dimensional, interesting people. And that's so when you're designing a game around them, the goal is always to like make the character feel like they do in the books.
Yeah, one cool thing about Marvel characters, they always have a weakness, and you guys kind of designed that right into the game with obligations and nemesis sets. So that's really cool.
Nemesis is ingenious card design right there. That is just amazing.
It's going to make every game feel like personal for that hero. We got a couple listener questions that are kind of topical and not just rules questions. So one listener asked, they said, the hype level for this game is truly higher than any LCG they've ever played. So was the demand and excitement for this game expected? And do you find fan expectations overbearing? And it's okay if you say we're overbearing.
I don't think I've experienced any overbearing.
No, not at all.
No, it's all really exciting. So here's kind of the, again, peeling back the curtain and kind of the maybe the cold reality is that we are so neck deep in Marvel design right now. And from the very beginning, we've been like being pursued by deadlines and racing to stay ahead that I don't feel as connected to the hype right now. Right now, I'm like, it's like, oh my gosh, we have so much to do still. But I'm really glad that it's there. Every once in a while, I get an email or a Facebook post or something that's really encouraging. Like, oh, that's right. People are really excited for this game. That's good. It's not just a lot of work. Like this. I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah, no, it's never been overbearing. It's always encouraging. It's always a good reminder that, you know, even as we're in the thick of, like, you know, being real busy, that we love the game we made and we're really excited about it when we get the chance to sort of breathe deep and remember that.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just been cool to see people as excited for the game as I've been excited to develop it. Like,
yeah,
I've had a blast working on the game, and it's really, really cool to see that people are enjoying all that work.
Yeah, you're ticking off a lot of boxes for a lot of different nerds out there, that's for sure.
That's good.
My question that I've had for a while, since I'm a person who does not live in my home city anymore, from Portland, Oregon, I play a lot of online games. Like, I play just a ton of online games. Has there been any talk about porting this over into a digital environment?
I don't know if we can discuss anything related to that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's just like one of those things where if it's not on our website, if it hasn't been announced, we can't really discuss anything like that.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all.
Had to ask.
I don't remember if that was you or not. You said you were enjoying the Lord of the Rings digital game. I'm super encouraged to hear that because I really enjoyed my time working on that game. And I think the team at FFI is doing a terrific job with that. So I can't speak to any plans for any of our games to get digital adaptations, but I'm just excited for whatever FFI does next.
Yeah, I've been playing a ton of the Lord of the Rings online. It has a lot of rewards just for playing the game. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. I bought the biggest bundle and I own all the cards right off the bat, but I love the reward aspect of that game.
Cool. Yeah, I love looking in the Palantir at the end of each adventure and seeing what you got. Yeah, I'm it's reached the point now where like the cards that I helped develop have all been announced. And so everything else that they're announcing now is like new to me as well. So I'm just like a regular fan now. Like, it's exciting to see the spoilers.
So another fan question. The fans are obviously really excited about this game, and some fans have even already started to make like fantasy cards and design their own heroes with this system you've built. Is there anything you want to say or challenge the design, the homebrew community with?
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I don't really know.
I have a personal policy. This is not a company policy, but my personal policy is I just don't look at any of it. And the reason for me, because this happened with Lord of the Rings as well. A lot of people would do their own custom player cards, custom scenarios, and I'm excited that happens. I think that's a really healthy sign of an excited community. The reason I don't look at any of it, though, is I never want to be accused of stealing someone's idea. That's really just my personal stand. I don't want anyone to be like, hey, I came up with that. I should get a credit for that. Or, you know, oh, look, they're getting lazy. They're just borrowing all the fan designs now. Like, I want to avoid all of that. So I steer well clear, but I don't mean it in any kind of disparaging way. I'm really excited that people are doing that, and I hope that they enjoy it and other people can enjoy their contributions. I think it's all great. I don't want anyone to be upset at me if they feel like I co-opted their ideas.
No problem. Hopefully no one would be. All right. We had two big rules questions from listeners.
Oh, Boggs, you get all the rules questions. FYI.
Bring them.
The definition of you, hero, and alter ego. Some cards, like Shocker, when you flip him up, say damage each hero. So if a character, say in a two-player game, She-Hulk is in hero form, but Peter Parker is in alter ego form, does Peter Parker take damage?
No, if the effect specifies the word hero, then only players in hero will take that damage.
I knew that one.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, I knew that
good
one, job. Too.
See, that's not so bad. And then if a card specifies you, so something like you cannot attack or you cannot thwart, is that just the player identity card cannot thwart, or you and all your allies.
You want to try this one?
Oh, okay.
I believe in you, Caleb.
I'm gonna take a stab at this, and then Box will quickly correct me. But no, I'm pretty sure we talked about this as a team, and the intention of the word "you" in this game is to, like I talked very early about what I like about the game, it's to make you feel like you are that hero. So the "you" refers to your hero. So if you are stunned, for example, your hero cannot attack. And the event cards that you play, like Uppercut or Swinging Webkick, these are meant to be extensions of your identity. You are the one, you know, swinging in and kicking the villain. So you couldn't play those either. But you do have allies that as a player you control, but they are not you.
They're not you.
They're not, you know, Peter Parker, Spider-Man. So if you are stunned, you can't attack. But your allies are kind of like autonomous. They still can. So that's what I'm going to say. Box will let you know if that's right or if you should ignore all that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Sweet.
Get a point.
All right, the last one was with combination with Pepper Potts and Power of cards from Aspects. If a Power of Leadership card is on the top of Iron Man's discard pile and they use Pepper Potts, does she generate two or one resources?
Oh, my gosh. I would have to see
this one, actually. I was talking to Nate about this.
You got this already?
Yeah, so she only generates one. So the ability for the power-up card, it's not active. You're not actually spending that card. You're just generating a resource that is the same type of resource as the card on top of your discard pile with Pepper. So in that case, she would just generate one wild.
So how she word is, like, she generates the resources? Because she generates two if it's a double resource.
If it's card, a double right? resource, yeah. It's like the print. I don't know if it says printed resource. Yeah. I don't remember the exact wording.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
But I was talking with Nate. Yeah. I think it actually came up sometime towards the end.
I have to say that I believe that was always the intention.
Yes.
That she's not playing the card. She's just gaining the resources. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew that one too.
All right, Crimson or Lester, you got any questions?
I actually also have a rules question that involves around the Pepper Potts also. Dude, Pepper Potts creates a lot of rules questions.
Yeah.
Say I discard a genius. Could I use Pepper Potts to get the two resources from the discarded genius? Are the discarded cards immediately put into the discard pile, or are they set aside until after they are spent?
I think I missed the first part of the question.
So effectively, if let's say you wanted to play Nick Fury from your hand, who's right. 4 costs, you had Pepper Potts on the board, you go to spend a genius from your hand, can you also exhaust Pepper Potts?
No.
The answer is no for that one. So all resources are generated simultaneously, meaning that effectively the genius won't be in your discard pile when Pepper Potts is using her ability, because it's all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So she'd only be able to generate something of a card that you spent before.
Yeah, you got to pay all the costs at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's what I was thinking too, but we did see that question on the Facebook group.
Yep, that's come up a lot.
And I'm just curious about the resource type. Was that like kind of one of the original design decisions to have the four different resource types?
Oh, the energy, mental, physical resources.
Yeah, I think that was
and wild or whatever. Yeah, because I think that's one of the most interesting design space things you guys have done with the game.
We could do another Caleb story hour answer about that question. another little like tidbit from the design process. The game used to be actually a lot more about those resources, and I was kind of like the last holdout. Like Nate and Boggs realized very early on that system wasn't working so great. It used to be like harder to play things. You used to have to like match resources to play stuff. Now we reserve the right to like do stuff in the future where maybe you have to spend a specific resource type, and there are a lot of kickers for spending specific resource types. But like early on, we had this thing where it was like, to play this card, you have to spend physical and energy. And it just became a play cards. So that's a little bit of our design process there of like, we realized, you know, the game should be about playing your cards, not figuring out how to pay for them, right? That was a whole conversation we had. But yeah, we always wanted to represent the different hero kind of powers, right? Like some heroes have, you know, genius intellect. Some heroes like the Hulk are just very strong. Others have energy projection. And so we just thought it would be really cool to capture that flavor in our resource system with those three types. And then, of course, wild just comes out of that.
Yeah, I think it's actually really elegant that you can use any card as a resource, but then, like you said, you have the opportunity to build these kickers into the cards to make them more powerful or more flavorful. I think it's very, very elegant.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah, I like the way Iron Man uses energy, or Miss Marvel, too.
Yeah, Miss Marvel, especially.
Sorry. We really appreciate your guys' time today, so thanks a lot for joining us and answering the questions that we had. Is there anything you want to say to fans and future players of the game? We're just 2 weeks from release now, so we're getting real close.
That's coming up, yeah. I'm just, for me, like I said before, it's really cool to see how excited everyone is. I'm very happy that the people are finally able to get their hands. I hope they enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think what's been especially meaningful to me is meeting people through Lord of the Rings over the last 8 years, and being at Gen Con when we announced the game, like so many people came up to me to express their excitement about, seeing my name on a box. That was really touching that so many people were excited. Like, oh, you finally got a chance to help design a game. I'm just going to buy it automatically. Like, that was really, really kind. So I hope everyone who buys it really likes it.
All right. That's all we have for today. So everybody, thanks for tuning in to Marvel Champions Monthly.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.